Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Headaches, crippling fatigue and exhaustion, just some of the symptoms experienced by my next guest, who 6 months after testing positive is still suffering with the debilitating symptoms of long COVID. Fine Gael MEP for Midlands North West, Maria Walsh, good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire, and thanks very much for having me on.
Not at all. Thank you for joining us. This is some story. Will you go back to when you first had your symptoms and your positive test for COVID?
Yeah, so I was in Brussels working in the Parliament and woke up very early one Wednesday morning. And for someone, I rarely get sick, be it a cold or flu. So it was something that certainly made me worry that I had contracted COVID. Fortunately, we have a test site within the Parliament. So within a couple of hours, I was able to get a test.
And this was last October, was it?
This was last October. And then within the 24 hours, I was told I had contacted coronavirus. For the 2 weeks, obviously went into isolation and came out of that, returned back to Ireland after taking several negative tests. And it was really only in early January where, you know, as you know, and as many listeners know, you know, work continues and busy life happens. And I really never took note of the continued fatigue or headaches. And I just assumed it was my body just getting over the fact that I had coronavirus. But in early January, I was frustrated at the fact that my energy wasn't returning. And as I had said, the muscle fatigue and intense headaches had still continued, brain fog also. And I went to my GP and explained, and fair play for him. He reassured me in saying, this is, and it sounds like, the effects of long COVID. Many people were presenting at the time with it. And I never really was aware of it other than the fact that you get COVID and you get over it and you move on. But it's a new thing. And 6 months on, I'm still week by week getting stronger and coming out of it, but still feel the effects on off days.
Can I just go back to when you had COVID initially, that 2 week period when you were in Brussels and you were isolating? How sick were you at that time?
Yeah, it was like a very bad flu. So I could feel it, you know, aches and pains in my bones. I hadn't lost the sense of smell or taste, but I did have very intense headaches and then fatigue, brain fog, and just overall lethargic feeling for the 2 weeks. But as you know, work still had to continue. We were in the helm of voting week, and you know, online engagement still needed to happen. So I was able to take some breaks in between the busyness of those days. But in many ways, come January, when I went to my GP, I was like, maybe I just didn't gift my body enough time over the 2 weeks to really rest and recuperate.
Because sometimes, and I don't know how you feel about this, but when I looked back, I was giving out to myself for not resting as much as I probably should have.
Yeah.
Because it does feel like you're going through something, but you can function. You know, you're not well, but you can function.
Yeah. And other than, you know, if someone told me I had a flu before COVID, I would have been like, well, I'm fine. I'm able to get up and move. And perhaps it's the Irish mentality of, you know, unless it's a broken bone, you got to keep plowing on. Where I'm standing now, looking back, I am kicking myself that I just didn't, you know, I just didn't take the 2 weeks or just didn't take additional time to really sleep and rest.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's one of the many attributes I think Irish personalities have, that you just move through it.
Yeah, probably not a good thing. We're learning all the time. So,
yeah.
So listen, how are you now then? Like, you talked about the brain fog and the headaches and so on. What is the impact of this thing on you now as you talk to us?
Yeah, I mean, for many weeks and literally over, each week as it goes on, I'm getting more comfortable and getting quite used to it, and still fulfilling, you know, my obligations as MEP, and doing online engagements and trying to keep my energy up, as well as doing some other courses outside of working as a parliamentarian. But there is times where I do feel I didn't feed my body enough good nutrition. I didn't get outside and actually away from my screen long enough to really allow my eyes to see anything beyond a laptop. So there's times where I do have to just stop and step away. And then there's other times where I feel absolutely fine. And it really is a trial and error going back to basics of, as I said, good nutrition, getting outside, you know, exercising a little bit, taking long walks. And for many times, and I don't know if you experience this, like I would stand up from the laptop, walk around and say, well, the 30 seconds is fine, that's sufficient time, when in actual fact, stepping away a little bit longer, stepping outside, taking in the fresh air, and then coming back would certainly help me within the brain fog. But it's week by week.
A lot of people talk about brain fog. Do you think that that's what you have been experiencing?
I would say yes, and again, I'm not a medical professional, but for me, considering my energy and my ability to jump in and out of meetings before I had COVID and being able to follow stuff a lot faster and a lot quicker, it's frustrating the brain fog because it just takes, it doesn't happen all the time. It's just there's things where you just feel a heaviness to your thought process. Mm-hmm. And then coupled with muscle fatigue and headaches, it's just, it's more frustrating that it's continued on for this long. But as I said, week by week, it's getting easier and getting better.
So what you, I mean, your life before this, you were getting in the car at 2 o'clock in the morning to get to the airport, to fly to Brussels, do your week's work. I mean, it was full on.
Yes, and many people don't, you know, you'd imagine as a parliamentarian, you're in Brussels from Monday to Friday, as someone would go to the office, say. Whereas for me and many other MEPs, it's, you know, I would leave, as you said, Shrew at 2 a.m. on a Monday morning, drive to Dublin, fly to Brussels, and then I would try and return Wednesday night on a late flight to be able to be within the constituency of Midlands Northwest from Thursday to Sunday. So you're almost splitting your week within 1 week.
Are you saying now that because you're going through this health issue that is just not on the cards for you, that you couldn't do that because of the fatigue?
Yeah, and not to scaremonger anybody, because normality will return, and how we come out of this is becoming easier. But for me now, if you were to say tomorrow morning you're back to pre-COVID normality, I would struggle to do the length of and the longness and the drive that I would have done pre-COVID. But
now,
week by week, it's getting easier. Whereas now I do, I typically do a month in Ireland and then a month in Brussels.
Okay.
And it just allows me to space it out and be, just give my body more time to just get used to the busyness and the pace again.
And as you're going through your day now, say today, for example, I don't mm-hmm. know, what time you got up at? 7, 8 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, I got up around 6:30, so
okay.
I'm helping my dad on our family farm. So while yourself and your listeners might sympathise with me, my father certainly doesn't. So I have farm chores to do. But I would have done a couple of interviews. I would have done a lot of reading, and I have a day ahead of Zoom calls with my team in Brussels, as well as my committee work on employment.
And can you get through that day?
Yeah, I could. I would feel it tonight. So I'll probably, and like most people, like I'll start very early, and I try and get to my computer around after farm stuff around 8 o'clock, and
yeah.
then I'll stay going until about 8 or 9 o'clock tonight, depending on what's going on.
But up until recently, you were having to sleep during the day, were you?
I would. I have to step away for short periods. So
okay.
I might, if I had a very, very intense meeting where, you know, if I was speaking to a school or I was hosting something and a lot of energy had to be pushed back through the screens, then I would just try and break it my day up a little bit, that I would take
half an hour. Let's try and get some advice on this now from Owen DeBarra, Senior Lecturer in the Royal College of Surgeons and also Consultant in Infectious Diseases at Beaumont Hospital. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, Claire.
What do you make of that, of Maria's experience? I'm sure you've heard it before. It's not unique, right?
No, absolutely. She's not alone, and well done to her for very eloquently explaining her experience. She's not unique at all. We don't have great data on this yet to sort of say where she sits in the population wise, but probably somewhere at least around 2% of people who've experienced COVID are going to end up in this sort of post 12 weeks after having COVID, having ongoing symptoms. Some studies suggesting maybe even 40 or 50% of people 6 or 8 months out have some residual symptoms. So she's absolutely not alone.
Mm-hmm. And is there any research then that shows you what happens after a year?
Yeah, well, we're only just about getting to that point, obviously. So there's an Italian group who's now reported 12-month outcomes. And they said about 40% of people still had some residual symptoms, with fatigue and headaches being the dominant ones. But
And can you tell me more about this brain fog? What is it? Do we know what's causing it? Is it nerve damage? What do we know?
Yeah, great question, because we actually don't know. We know that it occurs post other viral infections in particular. So we're familiar with it as an entity. And we're also familiar with the prolonged fatigue and that kind of fatigability, or what we call non-restorative sleep after other conditions. There is research going on, but what we really need to do is more. So thus far, colleagues in James's Hospital and colleagues from London and New York have looked for biomarkers, looked at this neurologic pathway, looked for inflammatory markers, and haven't found them. But I think we need to do more to understand that and to understand how to help people. So part one is validating and listening to people, saying, absolutely, you have something. You haven't returned to your normal condition beforehand. But so far, it looks like the majority of people will do. So it's 1% to 2% of people that end up stuck in this quite debilitating condition. And what we do know from other conditions is that a host of measures, again, like what Maria has been explaining, trying to moderate our activity, but also progress. So exercise, the fresh air, nutrition, those things actually help people in other conditions with this. We don't know yet whether there are clear benefits of this, but it's reasonable to say they would be.
Are you seeing that there's a particular age group or gender at greater risk of long COVID?
Yes. So thus far, again, there isn't a standard set piece methodology for these studies that have happened across the world thus far, but it does appear that females are at higher risk, maybe twice the risk of males, and that females, slightly older females, up to sort of 40s, 50s and 60s rather than the younger ones. And the other one that was interesting out of the London study was that people that had more symptoms at outset, and I was listening when Maria was talking, you know, that she had the muscle aches and pains, the headache, the fatigue. So the more symptoms you had, and up to five, it sort of predicted the people who were more likely to have this prolonged long COVID.
Mm-hmm. Maria, I don't know if you take hope from that, and maybe the advice as well on the nutrition and the exercise, which I know you're doing anyway out on the farm, but there is some hope that you'll be able to move on from this. And you say yourself that you're improving as time goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really reassuring to hear it and to the fact and highlighting that while we're hearing about COVID and many of the connectors of it, I think it's really, really important to give space to long COVID and reassure people, because I certainly need to hear it, that there is light at the end of the tunnel and that following the basics and as research, more and more research is done, then more and more info will come forward and be able to guide folks like myself. And equally to the point and picking up from the Times piece by Sheila Wayman, I was blown away at the fact that it's predominantly under 40s that were women that were experiencing it, and to really flag that, particularly the other gender that might not, males that might not be too comfortable going to their GP, that if they have experienced COVID and they still have the symptoms, to please come forward and speak to the general practitioner, because the more and more we learn about it, and I think the more we talk about it and give light to it, just the more and more we
absolutely
understand what's next.
Well, look, thank you very much for talking to us about it, and continued improvement on your health, and I hope that that the long COVID symptoms continue to improve for you, Maria Walsh and Owen DeBarra. Thank you both very much indeed for joining us.
Today with Claiborne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.